You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you, joined by the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mike Musselman. Gunner, what's up? How are you today?
What's going on?
Nothing.
I thought you had someone else on the show. I don't know. You're talking about me.
We were just talking off the air before Mike came on. Mike has become a person that I don't really know. You know, and you are much nicer now than you used to be. Yes.
Yeah.
Mike
sure.
always I mean, had a good streak in him. Okay, and you could always count on him to do nice things. But he's nice now. Like he's nice a lot. So it used to be like when I knew him, like most of the day he was a jackass. Okay, but he was funny. And so it was, like that's how we would roll around wherever we were, right? Hey, come here. What are you doing? Okay, shut up. What about you? What are you doing? All right, they'd start to talk. Okay, you shut up. And what's your name? You know, and just like, all right, don't be screwed up. And then walk away. And then everybody's like, who was that? What was that about? Right? And so it was that kind of fun and stupidity. And then, but you're doing real work and you're making it kind of fun. And Mike's like that. And then, you've heard the story about Mike Wishnia, right? So Dave Furness got a problem with Mike Wishnia. Who's he turned to? He knows Mike's got, he's a great guy. He's got a good streak in him. But you've kind of raised the stakes. Now you're like nice, Sultan. You're like nice a lot, which is not like you. You're like a nice guy. Tell everybody what you're doing, right now, I mean, with this drill press.
Oh, I'm like I said, I'm just cleaning the drill press. It's got a lot of rust on it. So I've been polishing it up, grinding all the rust out.
Did you say rust?
Yeah. It's been sitting around for a long time.
Rust, though? Really?
Yeah, well, Mac, it wasn't in my possession.
Okay.
I didn't have access.
Then I'm okay with it if it wasn't in your possession.
Okay.
But rust.
Hey, let me finish.
One of the worst ash chewings I ever got in my life was as a first lieutenant, standing officer of the day at Camp Johnson at Camp Lejeune. Camp Lejeune. I was force lat moved into the supply field. So as a first lieutenant, I went to ground supply officer course. I was the honor graduate there, just so you know, GSOC, as it's known, at Camp Johnson. In the course of that, I stood officer of the day. Now, I mean, I've stood officer of the day a lot, right, in an infantry battalion. So now I go out, I'm making sure everything's tight, I see the sentries, you know, I inspect the weapon, I pull the handguards off of the weapon, rusted all over the place. So in the logbook, you know, I just put the results of my inspection. Inspected post one weapon, rusted. Inspected post two weapon, rusted. And then I just wrote a little note. Would suggest whoever's in charge of the guard that they inspect those weapons. Obviously, the sergeant of the guard probably not doing his job, or the corporal of the guard. One of those guard guys not up to snuff. It's over the weekend too. So Monday morning. I'm standing there along with my relief, who was my roommate at IOC back in the day, Tim McMahon, and we're standing there, and I get my ass chewed like it rarely got chewed in my life by a female Marine major or captain, I'm not sure which these days, and she had red hair too. She lit into me about putting the word rust in her logbook. And she chewed my ass for 5 minutes. I don't know who you think you are. And so at the end of it, she looks at me.
She didn't talk like that.
Oh, trust me, she did.
Did she say,
why?
Did she finish with my, and your little dog too, my pretty?
Exactly. Yee, my little pretty. So she looked at me at the end of her little diatribe and she says, why would you do that? And I said, because they were rusty, ma'am. She looked at me and she said, because they were rusty. And you didn't think you should pick up the phone and call somebody before you put that in the logbook that the CO is going to see? I said, ma'am, on a weekend, I'm going to pick up the phone and tell you that you have rust in your weapons. I'm going to call you at home. That's not something that breaks squelch in 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. This isn't 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. It's support company. It's support company, Camp Johnson. All right? I'm like, yes, ma'am, I know that. All right, so let me tell you something. Do you know the pain you've caused me so far today? And I said, hey, ma'am, I'm sorry. But the weapons, they weren't a little bit spot rusted. You know, like because the salt air is so close, blah, 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 over something that maybe had a light coat of CLP. It wasn't like that, ma'am. They were rusted. What I put in the logbook was an understatement relative to that. And I'm not trying to be belligerent or argumentative. I'm just telling you, those weapons were disgusting. And then McMahon says, ma'am, I looked at him after I saw that post after Lieutenant McNamara stood duty, because I went and looked at him again, and they were still rusty. That's why I put it in there a second time. I'm like, McMahon, you jackass, you got me in more trouble. But anyway, my rust story. Okay, so now tell everybody.
Man, that was a long rust story.
I know, but it was good. I mean, she chewed our asses, and then you're dismissed. So
Okay, right? Wait, let's finish. Let's get done with the rust story, because your rust story.
Right, we write face, march out of her office, we get outside the building, and we start laughing our asses off. Right, that was hilarious, man.
But I apologize to everybody about that rust story.
That's a good story.
That was a little rusty.
That's the only time I've ever been stationed officially at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Were you ever stationed there?
No, I never was stationed there. I went to like classes and stuff, business, work. But no, never stationed there, man.
Yeah. And I was very happy about that, by the way, just so everybody knows. For the record, I did not want to go to Camp Lejeune. I don't like the East Coast. So anyway. All right, let's talk about your drill press. So so why are you doing this? Where did you get it and why are you doing it?
Where did I get the drill press?
Yeah.
I know,
but you said you didn't have it when
it's like Sears.
You said you didn't have it when it got rusty.
Yeah, it was stored. I had it because I didn't have no room for my garage, so I had it in everybody's place.
Okay, all right.
And so in the process, the guide track broke. I don't know how, but that's the thing that goes alongside that you use the hand crank, which is missing, that raises the table up and down. So once those come in, I ordered those, and then put those on there. And then, but in the meantime, I've been just cleaning the rust up, cleaning it up, making it look a little more presentable.
All right. So, we got that going on. And then how big is this thing?
Height wise, it's about 5 foot, 6 foot maybe. And then, it's a 15 inch one horsepower drill press. It's pretty big.
All right. And then
5/8 chuck, and then speed.
What'll Buck use it for? Does Buck know he's getting it?
Yeah, I asked him if he wanted it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was a surprise, if we should talk about it.
No, he's already come over.
Oh.
He's what I think. I haven't seen it, and this is, like I said, so you can attach anything. I mean, people that, you can use drill presses for everything. What I use drill presses for is polishing, so... when I'm working with guns and stuff, I can put fine polish and then put it on put the slide or something I'm doing and then move it through there and not have to worry about getting off track. So I use it for polishing, not actually drilling. And I think that's what Buck uses this for. He attaches something on there real high speed and he can polish the leather. But the nice thing about this, well, he's got one right now, but it's a tabletop. But this one you can... It's got a light, it's got all the stuff, and it's pretty high up, and you can stand, or you can, so it'll give you more flexibility.
Wow, a polishing device. That's a pretty big polishing device, Matt. Did you buy it initially as with that in thought, with that as an idea,
for drilling.
Okay, for drilling.
But I don't think I've ever drilled anything on that thing. Like I said, I've done, you can do all sorts of weird shit with that thing, man.
Like what?
You can almost use it as a lathe, you know?
I've never lathed anything. I've always been intrigued by it.
You've never put wood on the lathe?
Kind of fun. Never in my life. You know what? I had a friend who carved ducks. He actually got me to play ice hockey. So his name's John Carper.
You don't put ducks on a lathe, okay?
No, I know, but he got me into woodworking. We used to make these cedar awards at the basic school. It was a block of cedar with one side cut on a 45 degree angle. So we put a plate on that, and we took a bayonet and we heated it and ran it into the cedar, and the sign said, "Who said we can't?" Which we changed at one point to "Who said we had to?" I kind of got into, and he would hand carve these ducks.
Man, that's like high speed woodworking right there, man.
Well, for me it was. I'd never done anything, and then I bought an M1 Garand, and I took the stock and I stripped it down and redid that. I mean. And it looked as beautiful now. And so, I mean, if you could, I don't know, do you have a knack for, do you do woodwork and things like that? Because I'll tell you what, if you do, it's absolutely, some of the stuff you can find is absolutely beautiful. I have a buddy from high school who has a refinishing company, and he's been doing it since we were in junior college. And we'll be someplace doing something, and he'll see a garage sale, and he'll walk over, and he'll see a piece of furniture, and he gets his pocket knife out, and he starts scraping like antique paint and stuff like that off. And if he sees mahogany or some kind of nice wood, you know, he'll buy it for like $10. I'll give you $10 for this. Sure, thank you. And
well, wood's expensive. If people know what they got, wood is expensive, man.
And if they don't know what they got, and it's covered by like white paint or something, people that can work it, they'll take that thing home, they'll patch it, they'll fix it, they'll repair it for pennies, and then they'll strip it down, they'll stain it, they'll finish it, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Buck just said that you ruined his surprise.
I tried not to, Buck. That's not my fault. It's Mike's fault.
No, you're the one that asked me about it.
But I asked if Buck knows. Does Buck know about this? Can we talk about it?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, he knows about it.
Hold your leg, man.
All right. The
he does now.
Most of them, I guess. We were talking. My question: do you do woodwork, Mike?
No.
Oh.
Well, my planes that I built.
That's it. That's the extent of your woodwork.
No, I've done some goofy stuff.
Yeah.
I built a table out back and a chairs out back, goofing around, just trying different ideas, justifying the purchase of a planer and a joiner and everything else. Yeah.
you buy it, you got to get out there every once in a while, or else you get the constant comments.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, when did you last time use this? I used it yesterday because women don't understand.
No,
you know, you're like,
completely.
I had to go out there and plane some wood because that means for a guy that the BS antennas go up. What? But for a woman, it sounds like super complicated. It's super, you know, I'm planing and joining some wood corners, you know, and just throw something out. It's so funny. I hope she doesn't listen to this episode because then I'm screwed. Yeah.
Hi, Tina. You'll talk your way out. I was just saying that to Mac to confuse him. You know what a jackass he is. I'm just trying to keep
Mac
him happy.
Doesn't know about wood either.
Exactly. Besides, you know how he is. He's just trolling for trouble.
Yeah. He's a troublemaker.
Because that's what he is. That's what he's doing. Yeah, you with your little commentary on Friday. Oh, here we go again. Yeah, look at him go. Yeah, he's still. Oh, here we go. Another try. What was that? Why are you outing me in public?
Well, because you're a fire starter, man.
I know that, but
block of magnesium. That's block of magnesium with the other side that has the striker. Now you're just looking for the knife.
Exactly.
Something to run along that striker and start it going.
But I know, but that's what we do. You and I, we have fun like that. So why are you outing me in public relative to that?
Because it's fun. Because I'm no longer that person.
You know, now that you're the happy person.
Yeah, I've changed. I'm calm. I'm relaxed. I'm happy. I stop and talk to people. I have a good time. Yeah. I don't point out people's, you know, weaknesses anymore. I don't try and put people on the spot. No, that's not me. I'm a person that's in a good place now.
Wow. Well, you know what? You sound like it. Somebody asked me yesterday, what does it take to be happy? Since you're like the happiest boy I know, why don't you tell me, what does it take to be happy? If you were giving somebody advice about being happy, what would you tell them?
You gotta find balance in your relationship. You have to find balance. See, I don't work, but I'm speaking for him, but in your workplace, your friends, your friendship, and then that's your social and everything else, and then spiritually.
So hold on.
Those four things.
Your relationship, your work,
mm-hmm.
your spirit,
your society, your friends,
your spirit,
society,
and your friends,
and your spirit. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and once you realize and you figure out that you can equally devote, you know, a proportion to each one of those, man, it's great. See, my problem was, Mike, was work was really so consuming that it took away
everything from me. And it is that way with a lot of guys. I mean, I'll tell you, I talked to a mutual friend of ours yesterday who's getting out of the Marine Corps, and I said, so what are you going to do? He said, I have no idea. And our friends, I would say all of them, have put their head down, and they've done Marine Corps forever. And there's guys.
Yeah, they get out and they do right. Marine Corps.
There's guys who get out and they've been planning getting out for like 10 years. And you meet them like, well, what are you doing? Well, you know, I've, 4 years ago, I set up this thing and now I'm going to it. And then I have this going on and I'm attending this. And you're like, when did you do all this? Like, well, I've been planning this the last 10 years. And then you look at them and you're like, what the fuck? Were you not working? Like, when did you have time to do that? Well, you know, when I was with MLG and I was with base ops and I was with, you're like, those aren't my friends. My friends, they like get out and they're like, what am I doing? I don't know. Like, what do I do? How does this work? And so it's a bit different. Yes, Mike?
Yeah. Well, but see, that's just it. So you get these, and I got friends too that have great jobs and they get a lot of money every year, but they're constantly working. Constantly. And so they say, oh, everything's fine. No, not really. You can see it. Family, your relationship, your friends, you know, everything kind of goes, you got to make sacrifices and I got it. But when you don't have to, don't. Find an opportunity. Go do something else, you know, get a job where you don't worry about making, you know, $125,000 a year. Shit, find a job making 80.
60.
You know, and you'll find happiness.
Well, I'll tell you this.
You know, I'm not saying you're,
find something,
as long as you can pay the bills. Yeah.
Find something that makes you happy and then turn that into money.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's the key, is it? And again, I'm not talking about working for nothing. What I am talking about is, What are the keys of happiness? And I will tell you that I have not heard, you know, a better answer than Mike gave about those four things: your spirituality, your work, your friends, and I'm sorry, your relationship. And I would include family in that. Yes, Mike?
Well, that's your relationship.
Right. Right.
So family,
your family, your spouse. your work, your spirituality, and your friends. And so if you can get those things to work, but it starts with doing something that you're happy with. Somebody I was talking to was in retail, and I went, oh man, retail's brutal. It's brutal hours in terms of, you're not home when your family's home. You're off at work.
Yeah.
It's the whole customer service thing. The hours are rough and whatnot. And I said,
find friends that don't judge it.
Right.
Don't judge. They're not passing any kind of judgment on any kind of action you're doing. I mean, I see that all the time. People are like, oh, these are my friends. And they're like, man, really? That's a friend? You know, I have a different category for those kind of people. I'd never call them a friend, you know. But it's just amazing to me. But you know, they always say, you never know, you always know your friends, who your friends are when something bad happens in your life. Because it's those people that are going to be there for you. Without asking. They're just going to be there. You know? Or the ones that are calling or talk to you all the time, and they're the ones that can pick up on those subtle hints that something's wrong. Or the ones that, the most important one to me is the ones that are not afraid to tell you the truth, no matter how bad it's going to hurt you, but they know that what you need right now is a little truth, not some more bullshit down the line to keep going down this path. That can snap you up and go, hey, Kay, listen, jackass. What are you doing? All right? And then sit down with you, but then also help you get back on track. Not just point out the fault and go, good luck. But no, the ones that are there all the time. And, you know, again, it gets to region, where you're at, where you're living, who you surround yourself with, what kind of people. The problem with, and I'm not saying this is all California people, but a lot of things that I saw out there and people that I knew, it was just so fake, you know. They were always the kind of people that talk to you or shake your hand and they're looking over your shoulder at somebody else.
Yeah, look at sideways.
That's crazy, man.
Look at
you know what I'm talking about. People have all been part of that.
Yeah, look, shaking your hand, looking sideways like, hey, over here,
yeah.
Man.
Hey, good to meet you there, Doug. It's Mike. Oh, sorry, Doug. But those kind of guys, it's like, you know, and people say, well, those are people that are successful. No, bullshit, man. Materialistic objects don't make you successful. You know, it's that peace within and what you do and how you treat others. And you go about your daily life. That's success. What others will say about you when you're gone. That's success. You know, and I've been to those funerals where you go to the funeral of a guy and they pass and people are like, well, you know, hopefully he went to the right place or, you know, God, man, that guy was kind of an a-hole sometimes. Like, who says that to your friend?
I might have said that a couple times.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's, again, you're judged on the company you keep,
right.
The things that you do for others,
right.
And, you know, most importantly, we've all said it, and when no one's looking.
Yeah, what do you do?
Are you doing the same thing? Has anything changed? Do you continue to be the same, even when there's no gratitude or someone pats you on the back? You know, and I used to... That used to kind of, I don't know, kind of bothered me in the Marine Corps because when you see guys get awards for doing their damn job, and you're like, okay.
No, it's always an interesting little discussion. What's the award for? What do you do? Well, you know.
Oh yeah.
Did his job. What's an end of tour award for?
Huh?
What's an end of tour award for?
Recognizing all you did while you're with that unit.
All right. Why do we do those? Why isn't a handshake and a plaque good enough? The expectation is you get an award, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The expectation.
Yeah. He's
you believe he's lieutenant something, then you don't deserve anything.
Yeah. He's lieutenant colonel. He rates an MSM. Captain, right. He gets a Navy Com, yeah. Lieutenant, Nam. Okay, who's writing it up? Gunner? Okay. Gunner, write it up. Yeah. Get it done. Who's going to have that for me? Michael, do it.
Yeah. And, you know, and I remember one time, I'm not going to mention name, but he, you know, I had one of the staff guys come to me.
Well, I know.
Go, hey, Gunner, you got a minute?
Well, I know.
And I yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And he said, what's Gunner, his, you got a minute? What's going on? No, we're not going to talk about that.
What's his first name?
Don't try. Nope. And then, you know, he said, hey, you got a minute? I said, yeah.
Right.
Like, what's up? Hey, I'm doing the write-up for John Smith, and I need some background there. Like, what did he do? And I leaned back in my chair and go, wait a second, man. You were here the same time I was, and you actually worked with them more than I did. And you're asking me for a write-up? And I said, let me give you some good advice. If you're asking me what he did, and you guys did more stuff together than I did, then I don't think he deserves it. Well, no, you know, we got to give him something. Who's that? Where's that say that? Where's that say in the job description? Upon completion of your tour, you will get X award. If you join this job, joint jobs, then you get the joint meritorious whatever award.
Exactly.
And those things, you know, talk about the biggest bullshit award ever is any joint award. Because it's automatic.
You want to hear some
award ever?
Mike, this is funny. Mike and I both did sea duty back in the day when men were men and sheep ran scared. Anyway, so I'm on sea duty. We do a deployment to the Western Pacific. We relieve the Kitty Hawk. As she was known back in the day.
Affectionately
known. And you could tell the Shitty Kitty because she had a radar tower behind the island. The radar array was not all contained on the island. They had a separate, and so you'd see the silhouette of the ship off the coast of California, and you're looking. And I'm not a ship expert. Some people are. I'm not. But I could tell the Kitty Hawk, hey, there's the Shitty Kitty. Anyway, so we relieved them.
There's a big 63 on the side. That's always a dead giveaway.
That is, too. really? Why do we got to be like that? Anyway, not trolling for trouble. So much for nice. So then we're coming home, and we're planning the shellback ceremony, which was which was hilarious and a lot of fun. And I'm sure they don't do anything like that today. We'll talk about that in a second. The XO, the ship's XO, he's a full bird colonel, right? We're in for his 8 o'clock meeting every day. So I go down there with my little green book. I'm sitting there and they're like, all right, let's talk about end of deployment awards. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah, the Marine Corps doesn't give out very much stuff. You have to do something significant to get an award in the Marine Corps in peacetime, right? Or at least back in the day. So he says, okay, let me go over the allocations. And he gets to the Marine Detachment. Four Navy Commendations.
Navy Commendations. Yeah.
Six Navy Achievement Medals. And five captain's mast. And that was what we rated by virtue of number of officers, senior enlisted Marines, blah, 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 blah. And I looked and I didn't understand. And so he's like, any questions? And I raised my hand and I normally didn't ask questions, but I wanted to make sure I got this right. And I said, sir, I don't understand what happens if we don't have what happens if this is too many? Typical, like, I'm a lieutenant, right? A first lieutenant. What happens if this is too many or this is wrong? Do we give them back? And he looks at me, he says, what? And everybody kind of chuckles. He goes, no, lieutenant. Those are what you're going to give out. And I said, but we haven't written this many awards. He goes, you're going to, though. And I was being stupid, so I said, yes, sir. And I ended the conversation. But I didn't understand award allocations. Here's what you get. I thought it was all done on merit, and I hadn't seen anything. So I didn't understand what was going on. So a little bit embarrassing. But the Navy is like, yeah, that's what I get. They're like on it. They were also big on you're folding my clothes kind of stuff, which was really surprising to me. We would go down once a week, and we would take over the ship's laundry. Talk about miserable experience. You know, you're in a hot middle of a ship, and when you're in the IO, the hull of the ship warms up. I mean, physically, you feel it, right, Mike? And then you go down to the laundry, and you're just sweating your ass off because the dryers are going, it's humid as hell, and you're down there doing everybody's laundry. And so I used to go down there and hang out with the Marines and help with laundry and sweat my ass off with them because it was, you know, it was normally entertaining. Or at least I tried to make it entertaining, but it was huge. But I remember a lieutenant commander, prior enlisted Navy Mustang, he was like, I can't believe that my clothes came to me in a bag, and they weren't folded. And I'm sitting in there thinking, damn, as long as they're all in there, like, who cares? And he said, hey, this is the Navy. Rank has its privileges. I was like, ooh. I'm out. I sat in there. I got this education of another service and the way they did business. And he was dead serious about it. He wanted his clothes folded. And they had an issue about it. They had an issue.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Where did
That's true, though.
Oh, no. They're just different. I remember standing in line in the ship store. And there's like 6,000 people on the ship, and there's a store that can accommodate about 7 people at a time. And you got all these guys in coveralls that are turning wrenches on aircraft, guys down in engineering spaces that are filthy, and they're all standing in line. And the chiefs roll out of their mess, which is right across the passageway, with a toothpick in their hand, their fat gut sticking over their belt, and they walk right into the ship store because they have front of the line privileges, and they don't wait. And you have all these guys standing in line. So as a Marine, when you're off duty, you don't you go to the back of the line. You don't cut in line. So I'm standing in line for like 15 minutes, and finally one of them says to me, hey, Lieutenant, you know you have front-of-the-line privileges, don't you? And I said, yep. And now like 6 heads turn. Like, why aren't you cutting in line like everybody else? I said, we don't do that in the Marine Corps. If I was working and I hadn't eaten – and there was, you know, the war room wasn't open, right?
There's class systems, though.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, Mike, you know in the Marine Corps, how many times have you got to the back of the line to eat, right?
But, again, yeah, but you're trying to – that's apples and frickin'
– No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is because what they didn't understand is – so, anyway, and so they look at me and they said – you mean when you're not on duty, you get at the back of the line? And I said, yep. And they're like, are you kidding me? And I said, no, that's the way we do it. We, you know, when we're in the field, when chow comes, the officers eat last. We don't eat first. And one of them said, what happens if there's no food? I said, you get like wet lettuce and some ice with Italian dressing on it. And they started laughing. I said, hey, what are you laughing
for? I mean, that's...
Because you've done it. And they were like, wow.
Like completely, yeah. But that's, you know, there's hundreds of things. And so, like we said, when, you know, you're in the officer's ward, the mess, you know, they bust your table. You know, so we used to... And I remember we got reprimanded one time by the ship's XO because we were doing our own.
Right.
And they said, well, that's what the people are for. And we used to get pissed.
Yeah.
Because we'd have to give Marines up for mess duty.
Right.
But we would see them in the wardroom.
Yeah.
And they'd be busting tables and we'd say no. And we'd pull them back out. Said, no, you can have Marines, but they are not going to be serving the people, not going to be serving food. They're not like bringing you like a waiter. Or busting your table. They're just not going to be doing that. They can do other things, but they're not going to do that.
And
they used to have a big argument over.
Oh, and the funny part was the Marines would say, hey, sir, that's skate duty, though. We'd rather work in there than the scullery. Like, no, the only reason they need you is for the scullery. We don't need waiters, because we would do the same thing. You know, it's so counterculture. You know, all of a sudden, one of your Marines is going to come clear your plate off. Yo, that is not happening, okay? You're not clearing my plate.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
Yeah. And again, it's always a bone of contention among, you know, the services, how your culture fits on there. Where did you cross the equator?
In the Pacific.
Where?
Actually, we crossed the 00, so I was a golden shell back then.
Oh, my God. Where is 00?
International Dateline in the equator.
Ooh. I want to look that up. Yeah. About where? What did you enjoy it? Was it a fun time?
Yeah, it was a blast, man. I mean, it really was. It was so much fun.
Did you ever...
Even when we first did it, you know, when they abused you. But it was fun. It was, no one got hurt. You know, you just laugh at everything. And we even tried to take over. You know, we jumped a bunch of those shellbacks. We played the whole game, man. We would hide out and try and be dumbasses as long as we could. And they, you know.
It was awesome. A lot of fun. It was awesome. And I was telling somebody not too long ago, they cut fire hose to make, like, the whips they use to beat your ass, right?
And shillelaghs.
The shillelaghs, and then when you're a nasty wog, and then, by the time you get up to the flight deck, you've been crawling on your hands and knees, you have your summons in your mouth, they're making you blow the dirt and nastiness out of the tie-down, you know, things on the flight deck. You have stuff all over your face. And then you can, when the Marines come up on the flight deck, there's all these sailors running it. And you can hear them yell, the Marines are up here. And they come and they're just like laying it to you. But you know, it was hilarious. It was fun. And I didn't, you know, you go through this ceremony, which is they get the fattest guy in the ship. And, he's what's called the royal baby. And, He, on the Ranger, this guy was the sheriff's, he was a fire marshal, and he'd roll around in these red coveralls, and I don't know what size they were like 5XX, okay? He was ginormous. I mean, he had the gut that like comes out and then goes down. He had that kind of gut. And so he's sitting there with his shirt off and this big fat white hairy gut, and you're like, oh! And he has this bucket of gruel, like, sitting, like, underneath his gut, and he sticks his hand in the gruel, and he's swirling around his white, fat gut. And then he grabs your head, he goes, kiss the royal baby! And he shoves your nose right into his belly button. And everybody's laughing.
Well, you put a cherry, it'd take lard.
Yeah.
You take a scoop of lard, like a big handful of lard. And he'd stick a little Marciano cherry in his belly button, and then he'd take a big handful of lard, white lard, and smear it all over his chest so he couldn't get the cherry. And then he'd grab you by the side of your head, and he'd stick your face in his belly and rub it around while you're trying to get the cherry out with your mouth.
Mike.
And I knew.
Was that a good time?
People are like, people are like, what in the hell are you talking about? Yeah. That's everybody had to do with the royal baby.
Yeah, this is Mike. Explain to everybody
with no alcohol.
We're doing this over. Explain to everybody who Aphrodite is and the competition to be Aphrodite back in the day when only men went to sea on carriers.
Well, guys would dress up as girls and they'd have a beauty pageant, and then they would wear like mop. They would dye. Some guys. When as far as like the Navy guys, man, it was a big deal. So they would, they'd bring all that stuff with them on the float because, you know, they were going to win this time. But, yeah, it was crazy, man.
When I looked up, I saw this girl in this red dress, this tight red dress, and it was a mini skirt. She had black heels on. And I looked up and I was like, ooh. And
yeah, the Filipino guys, they could dress up and you'd be like, what the hell?
This was an Anglo. This is a Caucasian. And he had a wig on, and she's sitting next to Neptune, right? And so I have my thumbs in my mouth. I just kissed the royal baby, and they're like, "Hey, Lieutenant, who is this?" And I didn't know who it was. And they're like, and I just like, "I don't know." And like, "What? You don't know who Neptune's queen is?" And I'm like, "No, I don't." They're like, "Who is she?" And then they start beating me with those hoses. And I said, "It must be Neptune's bitch." And they're like, "What?" And then they have like stockade, like where you put your head through and your hands through. So I got put in the stock. They're squirting what, Tabasco juice, Tabasco sauce in my eyes. They're putting lard down my pants. And finally the chaplain comes over, and I didn't know who it was. He goes, "Mac, it's Aphrodite." I said, "It's Aphrodite! It's Aphrodite! Stop it!" So then you kiss Neptune's feet, right? And then you go through the cleansing waters. After you crawl through the garbage chutes and all this other nastiness, you crawl through these huge jet engine containers. They fill with water, and then you swim through those and wash it. And now you've been inducted into the Royal Order of the Shellback.
And you get a really nice certificate. You used to carry a card with you.
Yeah, it's official.
It was a big deal.
It was official entry in your
record book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, there were guys who lost theirs, right? Or it wasn't in their record books. And they were like, "No,
over."
Yeah. And unless you could document it, you were going through it again. They were.
Yep.
Yep. Come on. And we had some guys who were like legitimately nervous about it. We had a staff sergeant. He's our admin guy. And I go downstairs. It's like, you know, on the day we're going to do this. And the USS Ranger, CV-61, Top Gun of the Pacific, where the movie Top Gun was actually made. The Ranger is flying the Jolly Roger. So you go up on the flight deck and you look up, and instead of like the stars and stripe flying from, you know, the mast of the ship, it's the right. Jolly Roger. Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. But it was a fun day. I loved it. But that staff sergeant, he was scared. I said, "Are you okay?" He's like, "I'm really nervous about this." I said, "About what?" He said, "Sir, I mean, some of the stuff that they've been talking about doing, you know, like they're going to beat us with this." I'm like, "Staff Sergeant, come on. You went through Marine Corps boot camp. Do you think it's going to be worse than that?" He's like, "I don't know." I'm like, "Come on. These are squids. What are they going to do? They're not going to do anything." But it was a fun day. I enjoyed it. I still look back on it rather fondly.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them, the Navy participated in that, and I don't know what they do anymore, but
yeah,
they used to have Blue Nose, that's the Arctic Circle,
right.
Crossing the Line, let's see what else they had, Domain of the Golden Dragon.
What is that?
That's what they used to be called for Golden Shellback.
Oh, a Golden Shellback. So.
That's right, buddy. But I'm actually higher than you.
You are not. The
yes,
it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Come on, that's ridiculous. That's
Golden Shellback.
What does it mean?
No, no, no. Sorry, Golden Shellback is more. It is a hierarchy in
of the shellbacks
in the corps. Yeah, you have shellbacks. You have wogs, hollywogs, shellbacks, and you have Golden Shellback, and then you have Neptune himself and Davy Jones.
No.
They're the court guy.
Hold on, let me read you an email. "Mac, you've got to be kidding. I'm sitting here rolling listening to you two jackasses talk about that. I went through it on an amphib, and it was mostly Marines, and most of them had already been through. So I don't know what those squids did to you guys, but I can tell you this. It was not as much fun as you were describing. They beat our asses that day, and they enjoyed every second of it. At the end of the day, it was a pretty good time, though, but it was a lot of stupid stuff and a lot more Marines and squids, which probably tells you why it was so stupid. It was a hell of a fun day, though, and I look back on it fondly as you two guys."
Well, we used to cut our ice support mat up, and then duct like tape them in your butt cheeks so they wouldn't hurt as bad. But yeah, and you wore all your uniform inside and out backwards.
Right.
And you always had to be on your hands and knees.
Right.
And they would dip that shillelagh in that shit. And then you'd have to bite it and put it in your mouth. And that's how they walk you around. And they'd put you in another thing. But yeah, I mean, it was it fun? Yes. Looking back,
yes.
You know, when you're in a line with a bunch of other guys and you're, you know, on your hands and knees, and you don't, if you look up and you make eye contact with the scumbag, it's game on, buddy. They are going to play with you. And before, so like probably a month before you get across the line, try and stay low key as possible. Don't let them know your name. But so I was just a dumbass PFC, but I was a smart ass guy, even with the Navy guys. Imagine that. So a lot of Navy guys knew me, and I used to, you know, make fun of the Chiefs and stuff. And then when Shellback, and the PFC, you know, I just, you know, it was all within, like, you know, nothing really bad, but you know, they knew it, and I was just kind of that borderline smart ass. And then when Shellback, had my name on a wanted poster. They did.
Find this human.
No, they did.
What's amazing though is Marines will say stuff like, we have an you know, whenever you have a drill, the Marines don't know if it's an actual breach of a nuclear weapons security space or if it's a drill. You're not allowed to tell them by order, blah 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 blah. So we have one, and his chief walked around the corner, and his Marine turns and looks and says, get your fat ass on the deck. And so the chief comes and talks to me, and so I grab, you know, my gunnery sergeant, and we yoke this kid up. And the gunny looks at him and he says, would you tell a first sergeant to get his fat ass on the deck? And he goes, no, gunny, I'd never say anything like that. Well, he's an E-9. And then the Marine looks at us and said, he's a squid. And you're just like, oh, boy. Didn't you see all those hash marks as things? Well, yeah, but I mean, come on, Gunny. Like, you can't say that. And so it's interesting. And Mike kind of points it out like he's a smartass, right? Ask Mike, would you ever say that to a first sergeant, a gunny, or anybody like that?
No.
Not as a PFC.
When I was a PFC? No.
Yeah. But the Navy guys, that's not the same shit. Not the same shit. All right, let me read you. Let's see. Golden Dragon, achieved by crossing the dateline. So a golden shellback is the dateline and the equator.
Yes.
Ooh.
So it's by just north of Fiji. So out in that area. So
north of Fiji. Where's that? Where is that related?
Out by Guam.
Yeah. We crossed right by the Malaccan Straits, I think, after we went to Thailand on our way to the Philippines, on our way to Hong Kong. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And, you know, I want to remember, there was something, a big deal about it, because we were in a five-ship ARG. An amphibious ready group. And
I thought you did it while you were on sea duty. No.
No, I was already a sea guy.
Salty.
I was beating the shit out of people then. We were the only ship to cross and do that, and we were the only ones authorized because they didn't want that many golden shellbacks made. So it was a big contentious thing with the Navy guys. Was because we were a small detachment. I think there was only a company of Marines on board. But and the big deck did not cross there. She crossed the
road.
So that was a big deal. Like, we were allowed to do that, you know?
Wow. That is a big deal. If they didn't allow others to do that. Yeah, I want to say that we crossed, like, you come out of the Malaccan Straits and then you...
The Straits of Malarkey.
Yeah. Hey, listen to this. We're getting briefed about going through the Malaccan Straits. And so...
The Straits of Malarkey, as we used to call it. You'd get this big brief of how dangerous the pirates were.
Yeah, the pirates were.
Oh, my God.
And you're sitting there, and the first time they say it, they're like, blah, 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 pirates. And you're like,
yeah.
Like what?
And you're like, wait a second, I'm on an aircraft carrier, or I'm on a ship with a bunch of Marines.
Yeah. Oh, no, this
is... Let the pirates try and board us.
Yeah. Did he, like, what, like pirates, like, arg pirates? Like,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Except for the Jolly Roger, everything else.
Everything else. And you're going, you got to be kidding me. And it's almost laughable. Yeah. And then you go to general quarters when you transit.
The Straits of Malarkey.
It is malarkey.
Because all it is bullshit malarkey. It's something the Navy gets to do, man, whatever, and then get some ribbon or some extra pay for combat hazard pay.
Yeah. So you.
But we used to call it the Straits of Malarkey.
You go through there, and then when you come out of that, as you're heading back towards the United States, if you hang a left, you head up towards Thailand, which is where we were headed. And we went from Thailand, I think, to the Philippines and then up to Hong Kong, and then we went home. And so we dipped down and on our way back, and we did the ceremony there. So nowhere even close to where you did yours. Nowhere even close.
Remember, it's always going to be from now on the Straits of Malarkey. Because it's just bullshit malarkey when you go through there.
Of malarkey.
The hype. I mean, literally, I never forget the first day. I think we were on an amphib, and it was like, okay, tomorrow we're going to cross the Straits of Malarkey, and this is a pretty dangerous point in our voyage. And you're like, what? You know, there's pirates in this area. And the whole time this Navy lieutenant or whatever sitting there briefing us. And we're like, okay. And no one's asking the dumb question like, so you think that a boat of pirates of this small little indigenous island of these fishermen is actually going to drive out here, throw a bunch of ladders up on our ship, climb it, and take possession of the ship with two Marine rifle companies on board? Okay.
What's wrong with this picture?
Don't even have to take our rifles out. We can beat these guys with just our hands. So, like, okay, let's go, boys.
Yeah.
But they would, every time. And that's why we started calling it the Straits of Malarkey. All it was bullshit.
Sea duty was an interesting little education that you got. Just one, being like we're talking, being around the Navy. You get a great education about the way the Navy does things. And I'll tell you what, the Navy's great in their own right, certainly different from the Marine Corps. And those of us who joined the Marine Corps are extremely glad that we did so. And then you see the Navy, but you know what? The United States Navy, they can take you anywhere on the planet, and they can keep you there for as long as somebody tells them to keep you there. The way they can do underway replenishment, the way they can do resupply and all that nonsense, they can keep you anywhere forever and support you. And so they're great at what they do. And you really do get to see some cool stuff, whether it's they used to do vertical replacement. You know, the supply ship would vert rep, they'd call it. And it was these Navy CH-46s. And it was just like this ballet that they did. They'd go hook up to nets, and then they'd externally sling them. And then, I mean, which is an art in itself with a lot of weight underneath the helicopter and then flying the helicopter. And I saw one of those go in the water. And the rotors are still turning when he's in the water, and the crew's jumping out. And then he tips it to one side, and he jumped out the other. It was really impressive. But you see that. You see the underway refueling is kind of cool to watch. So you get this whole education in, like, Navy 101. And,
right.
It was cool. Anyway, where are you headed?
No, I'm just programming my daughter's garage door opener.
All right, that'll do it. We're done for the day. What are you doing? What are you doing?
All right, brother.
What are you doing the rest of the day?
Programming my daughter's garage room. She's got that remote in her car.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Sometimes it's not working. All right.
We'll talk to you Thursday.
It sounds good.
All right, bud. That is one happy man, Michael Musselman, here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the home for All Marine Radio. That is the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. My thanks. Fun show today. Interesting one. Tom Drowdy, Brigadier General, United States Marine Corps. My thanks to him for coming on this morning. You'll hear him in a few minutes, so don't touch that dial. And also for Graham Newsham for coming on. Graham, very cool to get up at, as early as he does to come on All Marine Radio. But he's a smart guy relative to... and again, what's interesting is the different subplots out in the Pacific. One is, with the exception of Korea and Australia, although he said Australia is a small country, he meant relative to population, right? It's a huge landmass, but most of it uninhabited. So Australia, you know, got a relatively small military because their population is not that big. But essentially Japan defenseless, Taiwan defenseless. And so... And then the subplot that the Koreans still hate the Japanese for World War II and the colonization of Korea and the exploitation of Korea, and which is a real political issue in Korea. So so all the different subplots that swirl as people try to get their arms around the threat that is posed by North Korea. And what's interesting from the North Korean perspective, in order for them to be sustained as a nation, they have to get nuclear weapons, and they've got to get it to a point where they can use that to leverage their existence. How about that? So that's the purpose of the nuclear weapons. It is, if we have these and we're capable of striking the United States, that'll make us safe. It's a form of mutual assured destruction. So, yeah, that's the rationale behind that. So it's great to have Graham Newsham on, and extremely happy that he got up early to do that and that we could bring that to you. So with that said, on a Tuesday, thank you for listening and making us part of your day. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Tell your friends about us, subscribe to the podcast, and you'll hear more of this kind of stuff. So, anyway, we'll continue to follow the news this week as we follow that story out both in Syria and certainly out in the Pacific. So, have a great afternoon. Tom Droughty, next, in about 120 seconds here, on a... Tuesday edition wrapping up on the All Warrior Radio Network. Have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow.